Okay, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the break, and now we are on to our next session. The NDIS is a minefield that we're all trying to navigate with all the twists and turns, and we try to do as many NDIS sessions as possible to assist you in your work. You also note that we are basing our next Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference in September on the NDIS 2, so make sure you grab some information on that outside the door. So today we have Kyle Thompson from AFTO to give us an in-depth overview of the pros and cons of self-managing or opting for an agency to manage your NDIS plans. Welcome, Kyle.
All right. Can everyone hear me all right with this microphone? Everyone at the back hear me all right? Hello, hello, hello. Excellent. Is that better or worse? Not sure. I think everyone's still enjoying afternoon tea, but that's okay. So I believe we're already in a room full of experts, so I don't really need to explain what the NDIS means or is, but I always like doing it anyway. So it's the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And it's called that because it's now Australia-wide. It's for people with disability. And it's an insurance scheme because anybody in Australia may already have or acquire a disability at some stage of their life. So it's not just about people who already have a disability. It's about everyone. And that's why it's funded by our taxes. So I'm not going to talk about, you know, how it all came about or about how to apply for the NDIS. This is all about actually managing your NDIS plan. So I'm going to assume that you've already been given access to the NDIS. You've already gone through the planning process in the NDIS. And you've actually got your plan. And people say, I have my plan, what now? And it's a very valid question. So at AFTO, so the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations, that's who I work for. I work on the Disability Loop project. And Disability Loop is a way of getting information about the NDIS to more people in a variety of formats and trying to dispel some of the jargon and make things a bit more accessible and a bit more easy to understand for a wider variety of people. And we're doing some workshops around Victoria at the moment. So Daru were kind enough to put these workshops in their recent e-news communication that goes out. So we're really thankful for that. And I was going to say that there's some spaces available in Box Hill, but I think they're all selling out, but I can promise that hopefully we'll be coming back very soon. And of course, you know, these are sessions that are free, so, you know, people with disability and their families shouldn't be expected to pay for this type of information. So AFTO itself, so we are the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations, and if we can go back a little bit, Jess. One more time. Oh no, I've skipped it. Anyway, so the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations is a peak body of disability organisations in Australia. So we don't take individual members, but our members are organisations. So groups like Blind Citizens Australia or Down Syndrome Australia, so peak information and advocacy groups around Australia, they are our members. And I mentioned before about the Disability Loop project, which is a part of AFTO. So again, we're running some workshops, so I had to give that a plug, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be doing my job properly. But yeah, and one of the workshops that we run is called I Have My Plan, What Now? And we also have two workshops called, one's called Plan Management, and one's called Is Self-Management For Me? So This afternoon I'm going to be running a very kind of cut-down version of this, a little bit less interactive than obviously the workshops will be, but I think it's important to talk about this. So, plan management. What is plan management? So the NDIS calls plan management managing the funding for supports. And every person's NDIS plan must include a statement about how supports in a person's plan will be managed. But what does it actually mean? So it means actually purchasing things in your plan, purchasing supports. It means administering the funding in order for you to purchase things. And at the end of the year, it means acquitting any funding, so letting the agency know what you did with the money and that you spent it in the right way. But more simply, plan management involves budgeting, keeping records, and paying for supports that you've been given an allocation for in your NDIS plan. And again, people call it managing your money or paying for your supports, and it doesn't really matter what you call it, but it's all a type of plan management. And it's really important because most of the time we think about, you know, getting into the NDIS, we think about making sure you have all the supports in your plan, and we tend to kind of neglect the very important step afterwards where you've actually got, or you've hopefully got enough supports in your plan. How can you actually use it? And I know that the NDIA, so the National Disability Insurance Agency, they were a little bit surprised early on because some early plans had lots of funding in them, but people weren't actually utilising or using the funding. And they were a bit shocked. They were saying, why is this? And that's because historically, people with disability and their family members have been told where to go, what to buy, who to talk to, and with the NDIS, although there is some support, it's a lot more dictated by you rather than by someone else, and that can be really challenging. But it's a good challenge, I think. So through plan management and of plan management, self-management is one method. We'll talk about that soon. But no matter which way you use your plan, no matter which plan management method you use, it's a really good way of actually improving your skills. So it can involve improving your organisational skills, your budgeting skills, your people skills as well, because it involves talking to people and negotiating supports, that type of thing. It's also a really important step in negotiating and resolving any conflict. So if you're actively involved in managing your plan, you have to be actively involved in managing any problems that may arise. And we're not under the illusion there's never going to be any problems. But what's important to know is how to deal with any problems if they do come up. All right. And really, this is what you hear about again and again. This is about choice and control. You've got your funding in your plan, and plan management is about using your choice and control to actually live the life that you want to live, whether that's an ordinary life or an extraordinary life. I know personally in my NDIS plan, one of my goals is getting out of bed every morning, and it's not very dramatic or exciting or flashy, but goals don't have to be. They can be if you want, but they can be simple things as well. All right. So I'm going to go through the actual methods of plan management. So the most common method, I'm not quite sure about my numbers, but I think around 80% of all plans, so by far the largest method, is where the National Disability Insurance Agency, or the NDIA, they manage your plan on your behalf. And if you do this, if you choose this method, importantly, it means that you can only use providers using your NDIS money who are registered with the NDIS. So that means the providers that you use have to be registered with the NDIS in order for you to use your NDIS funding to pay for those services. But what does registering for the NDIS mean? It means that a business has applied to the NDIS and said that we believe we can offer these services, and they've shown evidence that they can do that. And the NDIS has said, yes, we believe you've given us enough evidence that you can offer these services. So it's a safeguard because they've, you know, they've done the checks and balances to show that they can deliver the services that they say they can deliver. But at the same time, in some ways, it can be a little bit limiting as well, because lots of businesses, maybe they're not quite so organised, or maybe it's a bit difficult, but lots of businesses haven't actually registered with the NDIS, which means that if you have an NDIS plan that's managed by the NDIA, so it's plan managed through the NDIA, it means you can't use these businesses with your funding unless they're registered with the NDIS. So it's really a bit of a catch-22. Slowly over time, businesses are registering, which is good, but there's always going to be a bit of delay until everyone gets their systems in order and more businesses register. So in this case, you do everything. So you pay providers, you engage with providers through the NDIS portal. It's called the MyPlace portal. And we're going to talk about the portal a bit more later on. But that's one of the key differences when you use the NDIA to manage your plan. But I'm going to skip straight to the second plan management method. And that's when you use a registered plan management provider. So they're called registered plan management providers. That's because they have to be registered with the NDIS. And if the plan management provider registers with the NDIS, again, it means that the NDIS believes they've got the skills and the resources to actually do the things that they say they can do. And in this case, the registered plan management provider pays bills on your behalf. They generate like records of how much money you have left over in your plan. And in some cases, they can also do some level of conflict resolution and, you know, helping you make decisions and that type of thing. And if you choose this method, you have extra funding in your plan that is dedicated towards using this method. So some people were worried that if they use this method, it will cost them more money and it will eat into their usable funds in their plan. But no, that's not the case. It's extra funding on top of the money you already have in your plan to purchase supports and services. So does anyone know about Moira in Victoria? Anyone? Yeah, okay. So they used to be called Moira FI, Moira Financial Intermediary. And now they're called Moira PMP, which is a plan management provider. So Moira are a little bit, you know, excited, I suppose, maybe a bit worried, because now they're not the only plan management provider in town anymore. Now other providers can register with the NDIS and offer a similar service to Moira. So when I'm explaining what a plan management provider does, in Victoria anyway, I say that it's like Moira. So they pay your bills for you on your behalf, and they can help you with some basic queries around how many funds are in your ISP in Victoria or in your NDIS plan. But if you're using a plan management provider, a registered plan management provider, you no longer have to use the one company that exists in Victoria. Now there are multiple, and there's going to be more every month, every week, every year, available for you to choose. So I'm pretty much, you know, as male, middle-class, white person. But if I was someone who spoke English as a second language, I was a recent migrant maybe, and I wanted someone to help me manage my plan, there'd be nothing stopping me from using a plan management provider who was bilingual or who lived, you know, 5 minutes away from where I lived. So we're opening up a lot more options as well. So no longer do we have to use the one option presented to you through the Victorian-based system. So again, choice and control with the NDIS. Okay. So, a plan management provider, they're a middleman, they're a middle person. They exist between you and your provider of supports. So say it might be personal care, you engage with the personal care provider, the personal care provider invoices you or your plan management provider, and the plan management provider pays those bills. So it's boring a little bit, but it's functional, and not everybody wants to do this themselves. So for many people, it's a really good option. So some plan management providers would have already been a disability service provider in Australia or Victoria, and some would be completely new. So, they don't really need any prior experience as long as they have met the registration requirements with the NDIS. So it wouldn't surprise me if some accounting firms are going to move into the disability space. They might have the computer systems already, they might have the financial skills, they might have the disability skills, but they might be willing to learn. So again, it's a marketplace, and more options are becoming available to people with disability. But again, knowing about these options and knowing the pros and cons is a different thing. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't give people options, because it's a lot better to improve people's skills and their ability to research than it is to limit people's choice. All right. But if you want to do the most yourself, you can move on to the next option, and that is self-managing. So this is an option of plan management, and this is where you, as a person with disability, or maybe a parent or a legal guardian or a nominee in the NDIS, you manage the plan yourself. It's called self-management. And what it means is you pay the bills, you deal with providers, you keep track of your budget, and you do more for yourself. And for some people, they might say, I can't be bothered doing that. I already work, full time. I've already got 3 kids. I want to enjoy my, retirement. But for some people, they might really want to self-manage their plan. And again, it's options. It's an option available to you if you wanted to use it. And importantly, when you self-manage, as well as when you use a registered plan management provider, you can use providers who are not registered with the NDIS. So you don't have to limit yourself to service providers who are registered with the NDIS. And why am I, using dramatic pauses here? I'm doing it because it's a big deal. It means you've got more options available to you. So one of my favourite topics, which might take, I have to be careful of the time, because I might go on about it forever, but is using the mainstream and mainstream products, mainstream services. And I think people with disability can really benefit from using the mainstream a bit more. And lots of mainstream providers won't have registered with the NDIS, mainly because they might not know about the NDIS, or mainly because they mightn't have a disability-specific skills that they might need. But I challenge people and I say, why do you need a disability gardener? Can anyone tell me what a disability gardener is? What does that actually mean? If I'm in the NDIS because I have a physical disability and I can't mow my lawns, and the NDIS sees that it's a reasonable and necessary need, so I have funding for some basic lawn maintenance. No, you can't get funding for, a hedge maze or topiary or something like that. If it's simple garden maintenance, why should I go through a disability service provider to get that done for me? So you might disagree, and there are some reasons why. I know of people who, face discrimination from the mainstream because mainstream providers might not be equipped to, have the right attitude or experiences with people with disability, and that's a legitimate concern. But if you want to use a mainstream provider to get some things done, why shouldn't you? So when you self-manage your plan, or use a registered plan management provider. You can use a mainstream provider regardless of whether or not they have registered with the NDIS. And it does not mean that this mainstream provider can't register with the NDIS. It just means that so far, not as many of them have. So if you self-manage or you use a plan management provider, you can have more choice and more control over the funding in your plan. All right. So, yeah, you have a wide access to a wider range of supports and services if you self-manage. So, in the NDIS, there are these things called service agreements. And a service agreement is normally a written document between you as a person with disability and a provider of your choice. And a good service agreement should talk about how the relationship should go. It should talk about, you know, what you want from the provider. It should talk about what the provider wants from you. And it should be a negotiation. So it should not be a form that gets put in front of your face saying, sign here. And if you do that, I would consider going somewhere else, because you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to use the same provider again and again with the NDIS. A good service agreement should involve some compromises, maybe, from both parties. Maybe it could involve preferences for gender, for your personal care. Even, you know, you might want to, if you're doing community access and you're 15, you might want to go out with, you know, cool 20-somethings rather than people who are, you know, older than your mum. And it doesn't mean that you'll get what you want, but you're allowed to ask for it with the NDIS. But if you're self-managing, you have to do this yourself. You have to actually negotiate with what you want. And as I'm sure you're more of an expert at this than I am, for many people with disability, there's chronic disempowerment where people have been told again and again, you know, what they should be doing or what they can do and what they're not allowed to do, that over time people with disability and their families settle for suggestions and options that they might be okay, but they mightn't be optimal and they mightn't be the best. So over time, I'm really hoping that the NDIS encourages people to strive for more and to demand more. And I'm sure you're all the same, because you're all you know, related to advocacy in some way or another. And that's important, that we can slowly drag the standards of services up over time. So a good service agreement, I always joke and say that a good service agreement means that both parties leave really unhappy, because they've both compromised enough to mean that you know, they've made a deal with each other, and it's, you know, good, but they both, you know, compromised some things in the process. But if you're self-managing, it means that you don't have anyone there to help you make this service agreement. Whereas if you use a registered plan management provider, you might have someone there helping you to, you know, check the terms or read what they've written and be a bit of a, you know, be a bit of a support for you, you know. And I'm sure you're all saying, why don't they get an advocate in? And that's a good idea, you know, they should do that. But again, with chronic disempowerment, some people don't actually know that advocates exist, and there might be things like waiting periods and that type of thing as well. So it's definitely a concern for some people. So when you self-manage, you have to manage your budget as well. So even the word budget can send chills up people's spines. But, you know, when you get the NDIS, you get your NDIS plan, it's a plan for a year. And it's a year from the date that your plan is approved. So it's not a financial year or a calendar year. It's a year from the date of your plan being approved. And it means that you have resources or money in your plan that you can then use to purchase things and products and services. But you have to make sure that you don't blow it all in the first, you know, 3 months. You have to make sure that you use it evenly or relatively evenly over the course of a year. So, you know, you might be like me, and when it's winter, you might be a hermit and not use any community access support. But when the weather gets a bit nicer, you might use more in the summer months. So it doesn't mean you have to use the same amount every month, but it means you still have to keep track of the amount of money in your plan. And again, if you're self-managing, you're doing it more alone, you have less support than if you were having a plan management provider help you out with that. But some people really love this, that they love being actively involved in their life. And we really can't discount how empowering and how, how much positive change this can bring to people's lives. People feel a lot more involved in their life and a lot more in control of how they live their life. And that's really important. But at the same time, some people might say, I have to look at budgets at work as it is. I don't want to have to worry about my own personal NDIS budget all the time. So, pros and cons. So when you self-manage, you also need to keep a record of purchases. So, the NDIS is our taxes at work, and we want to make sure that our taxes are being spent in the right way. So that naturally means that any purchases made using NDIS money should be spent on the right thing. And the right thing is determined during the planning process. So you have to make sure that you're spending the right things using your money in your plan. So I'm self-managing my plan, and as much as I would love to use it to, buy me a new computer or a holiday or that type of thing, I can't. And that's okay because, we want to make sure that the scheme is sustainable and being used in the right way. But you have to maintain purchases or records of purchases for at least 5 years. And that can be harder than you think. Has anyone ever put receipts in a shoebox or stuck them under their bed and then eventually, cleaned out their room and found out that they're all faded? All the ink's run off and, they've been eaten by snails or, depending on, maybe it's just me and I've got a really dirty room. But what I'm trying to say here is keeping records is harder than you think. So you might have to scan them. You might have to back up your computer. So if there's a crash, you've still got evidence of the things that you've bought. And that's a way of the NDIS being transparent around the funding that they've given you to use to purchase reasonable and necessary things. So if you're self-managing, you have to be more actively involved in managing your records and keeping records of the things that you buy. All right. Okay. So one of the negatives, I think, of self-management is that you have to do more for yourself. I mentioned this before. But some people really don't want to do all this. They might want to get the benefits of, having more choice and control over the providers that they use, but they might not actually have the skills or might not have the need or the want to actually, keep records and organize providers and deal with any conflicts and that type of thing. So if that's the case, what are the options available? And luckily, with the NDIS, if something is your goal and you can't or you haven't been able to achieve your goal because of your disability, then you can often have capacity building supports included into your plan. So what I mean by that is, say you're a person with disability, maybe you have an intellectual disability, and your parents have been a little bit conservative and they haven't given you much education around finances, and you want to move out of home, but you don't even know how to use, internet banking, or you don't have very many financial skills. So what do you do? It doesn't mean that they simply say you can't self-manage. The NDIS would say, if self-managing is one of your goals, how can we build your skills so you can eventually do that yourself? So it might be financial classes. It might be, getting software on your computer to help automate some of this, you know, record keeping approach or duties. So what I'm trying to say here is, just because you don't have the skills or you feel like it might be too difficult, it doesn't mean that you can't get the benefits of self-managing. And one of the actual really big benefits of self-managing is you can actually directly employ your own staff. So you can become the employer or the boss or the manager or whatever you want to call it of your own team of staff. And this is normally for personal care workers or community access workers, where you employ them. And if you're employing someone, it's not something to be taken lightly. You know, bosses often get, you know, often, you know, get told that they've got an easy job of, you know, bossing people around. But if you're in charge of someone, you're responsible for someone. So if you're self-managing and you're directly employing your own staff, you need to make sure that you've got the right insurances for yourself and for them. You have to make sure that you're paying them not just minimum wage, but the appropriate award wage as well. You have to make sure that if they're, you know, casual workers, they're getting leave loading. If they're part-time workers or full-time workers, they're getting leave entitlements. You know, so many kind of arduous or, you know, important but complicated things you have to worry about. But again, this is an option available to you if you self-manage. So only about 5% of people self-manage, and I think only about 5 or 10% of people actually directly employ their own staff. So this is quite a small number, but that's okay. For some people, this might be really important. You know, maybe they're living in a rural area and they really need to lock down staff for a long period of time. They might, you know, pay them extra because, you know, in order to make sure that they don't leave and go somewhere else. They might want more control over their staff because they don't agree with the, you know, communication policy of the personal care agency in the area. I know when I was at university a couple of years ago, or more than that now actually, but when I was at university I had personal care workers come in and they were, you know, middle-aged, in their baby blue uniforms, looking like fish out of water, and I was probably, you know, 18, 19, and I was thinking, I'm going to be so uncool hanging around with these people. So, you know, if you directly employ your own staff, you have more control over conditions of work. You know, maybe you have casual dress code, or you know, purposefully employ students or that type of thing. So what I'm saying here, there are more options available to you if that's what you want to do. And I know I'm nearing the end of my time before we get to questions, but what I have forgotten to say, and one of the biggest benefits of self-management, is that you can pay providers or people more than the price in the NDIS price guide. So have we talked about the price guide at all? Does anyone know about the NDIS price guide? Anyone know? A little bit, yeah. So what it is the price, what a maximum price that providers can charge for certain services. So personal care has a price cap, occupational therapy does, gardening does, everything you can think of has a maximum price. And this is a way of avoiding providers charging whatever they want, you know, trying to be opportunistic. But if you self-manage, you can pay providers more if you want. And it doesn't mean that you get more money in your plan. It means you have to use your money more sparingly. But say there's an occupational therapist who's, you know, for mathematical sake, twice as good as the next one, but they cost 50% more. If they're twice as good but only 50% more expensive, you know, maybe it's worth the extra price that you pay. So again, for those who really want to drill down and get the most out of their plan, have the most choice and control out of their plan, if you self-manage, you can actually pay providers more than the maximum in the price guide. But yeah, you have to be careful, make sure you're not getting ripped off, that type of thing. Can we go across, please, Jess? So I'm just going to quickly touch on a few NDIS systems. One of them is the NDIS My Place portal. And this is where you log in. It's linked to MyGov. You might be familiar with MyGov through, you know, Centrelink or the ATO or Job Access. But this is a linked service to MyGov. So when you're in the NDIS, you can set up your NDIS MyPlace account. And that's when you log in and you can see how much money is left in your plan, that type of thing. So this is where, if you're having the NDIS manage your plan, you create a service booking, and then it all happens in the background. So providers claim, you can monitor it if you want, but you don't need to. You don't need to authorize any payments once you've set it up. But if you're self-managing, this is where you log in and claim reimbursement from the NDIS for any costs that you've incurred. So say I'm self-managing and I get a bill for $2,000, I can log into the portal and I can claim $2,000 from my plan. Then I can wait a day or two for it to appear in my bank account, and then I can pay the bill to the provider. So that means that I'm not actually out of pocket, because I can claim the money when I get the invoice rather than when I make the payment. So some people are a bit worried that they thought they had to pay first and be reimbursed later. But as long as the provider invoices you and has maybe, you know, a week or two invoice terms, you can definitely get the money in your bank account before you pay them. So that's not really a concern, if you know that. So I'm getting very detailed, so some of you, your eyes might be glazing over. But what I want to kind of end on is the fact that, you know, there are so many more options now with the NDIS. And this is what people, you know, forget. People have spent all their time working out how to get into the NDIS and how to make sure that they have a really good planning conversation with the NDIS to work out what supports they get in their plan. And this is, yeah, very, very important. But what's just as important is actually having your plan and using it. When I say using it, I mean not just sticking to the same providers you've always used, but trying something new. And, you know, maybe ringing up, you know, Jim's Mowing rather than going through some Victorian disability provider that does gardening but charges twice as much. You know, if you want to self-manage, you can use the mainstream more. And why is it good to use the mainstream? Anyone? Please, help me. Why is the mainstream good to use for people with disability? Yeah? Sorry, I shouldn't do this. You have to run the microphone over there. If you can yell, I can repeat it if you like.
Because we're creating a more inclusive society.
Yeah, people with disability are accessing the community in a non-segregated way. And that's what it's all about. And the more this happens, the more mainstream services will value people with disability as consumers and also as people, rather than the other over there that's just for disability providers or just for you know, the medical side of things. So accessing the mainstream is really important, and I think we don't quite talk about it enough. How am I going for time?
Yeah, we've got 20 minutes.
Oh, we've got 20 minutes. I'm talking too fast.
But then, Mick, we've got time for questions.
Yeah, let's have some questions, and if something else pops into my head, I'll be sure to be very
wordy. Can you raise your hands or I can see you?
Any questions? Yep. I'll let Melissa organise the microphone.
I've actually got two questions.
Perfect.
The first one's about the just clarifying a registered plan manager role.
Yep.
Because you mentioned they pay the bills and manage budgets, mm-hmm. but do they also choose the providers and employ the providers?
No. So with a registered plan management provider, if I'm getting more complicated, there are actually two varieties. So there's a There's just a financial one who just pays the bills and just generates invoices. Sorry, generates statements of what they've paid. But there's also one that's a bit more involved, where they may do some, emailing on your behalf, or fixing any issues that may arise. But it's often quite low level support, so they're funded at quite a low level. So it's not full on advocacy, or it's not support coordination either. Some of you might know about support coordination, so it's less involved than that. But no, they don't employ anyone apart from their own staff, but they just pay bills using your funds in your plan. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yep. Yes, it does. Thank you.
And your second one?
Another question. You mentioned that if you're self-managing,
yep,
you could pay a provider above the NDIS yep price.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pay them? Do you have to use your own money, or can you use the money allocated in the plan
and
sacrifice something else?
Yeah, so say you have maybe 50 hours of personal care a week, but your provider that you really like charges a bit more. So functionally, at that rate, you can only pay them, you can only get 45 hours of personal care. But if you feel that that trade-off is worth it, then you can do that. So you're actually reducing your amount of purchasing power in the amount of hours that you can get, but you're not. But if you feel it's worthwhile, you can do that. And as an extension of that, eventually, we say the price guide is a price limit. So some providers will, and already are, charging less than the price guide. So I'm imagining a situation where, on a Saturday night, you need some personal care, and you need someone who's got really good skills, they can do your hair and your makeup, and they charge lots of money. But you find it worth it because you're going out on a date. But during the week, in the morning, you might want the bargain basement agency because you're going to be in your pyjamas all day anyway. And you don't care to be seen with someone who's not quite so cool. So you can save money in one area and then use that extra money in another area if you want. It's about being creative.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Other questions?
I've had a plan management provider since I was registered in January, and
on the NDIS.
Yes, yep. Yes, the delays for payments to my carers and providers have been 2 to 3 months for that whole period, and I've asked them about what the issue is, and they've said that this is a problem with all PMPs. A lot of it's technical problems with the NDIA, but when I speak with the NDIA, then they say it's the problems with the PMPs not coming up to scratch. But yeah, do you know very much about this?
I know last year in July, the NDIS was switched on, if you will, in my area. So the full rollout began. And they also implemented a new portal. So the MyPlace portal was introduced, then it replaced what was already there. And that was very, problematic, to say the least. There was delays with payments for providers. Some of them were, needed to get emergency funds or they would have gone under, lost business, that type of thing. I've been told that that's been resolved now, but I think the issues with plan management providers, for some people, still exists. And I'm not an expert on how they interact with the NDIA, but what I do know is that, some have had a lot more success than others, and I don't want to say that yours is no good, but what I want to say to everyone else is that if you choose one and they're not working for you, there's nothing stopping you from calling up another one, saying so-and-so are having problems with this, what's your solution to this problem? And if they have a solution, and you can read reviews online, you can, ring a customer and get a testimonial. If you think they'll be better, then you can use them. You can swap your plan management provider if you want. So that's not really answering your question, but at the same time, if you feel like now that you might be able to do it yourself, you might be able to move to self-management, because that will be a way of, you know, getting rid of this problem as well. But all I can say is the NDIS needs plan management providers. It's a very big part of the NDIS, so it should be their priority to try and fix some of these issues, because it's unacceptable for providers not to be paid for 2 to 3 months. That's bad cash flow no matter what way you look at it.
True.
Yeah.
My name is Christian from the Diversity and Disability Program at the Migrant Resource Center Northwest. Now, a good question I would like to ask you. The first one, before the NDIS came here in Victoria, we do have a system called the ISP, Individualized Support Package, and I am receiving that, and I self-manage it. We basically, it work in a way that at the beginning of each month, a pool of money goes into my bank account to manage and to use. And of course, I need to keep track of all the expenses and the receipt, invoices. Now, would there be a similar system available under the NDIS?
Cool. Thanks, Christian. So, in the Victorian system, prior to the NDIS, if you were if you were receiving direct payments through the ISP system, each month you received 1/12 of your budget in your bank account. And that was pro rata or whatever you want to call it. That was paid once a month. And that meant that you could use that money to purchase things. And at the end of the year, you had to acquit your funding. So you had to either carry some of it over or pay some of it back, or at least prove how you've been using that money, because there were no checks and balances while the year was progressing. So with the NDIS, when you self-manage, you only claim reimbursement or you claim money from the NDIS after services have been delivered. So again, if I've spent $2,000 on personal care for that month or that period, I claim that exact amount on the invoice out of my plan. And I tick a box saying that this is a accurate reflection of what I spent my money on, it's in line with my goals and my plan, blah, blah, blah. And then that means that you're acquitting your funding as you go along, because you're only claiming for what you've already got evidence of what you've spent it on. So that means at the end of the year, you don't have to do any acquittal because you've already been acquitting as you go. So you may still get audited by the agency. They're not going to release the figures of, the percentage of auditing, but they may actually ask to see these receipts, but you've been acquitting as you go along. So it's different in that you don't have money sitting in your bank account. You only have money sitting in your bank account after you've already claimed it from the NDIS. So this could be a problem. Maybe, say you need to buy some gloves from a pharmacy out of your self-managed budget. For that, you're not going to get an invoice from Coles. They're going to want you to pay for it right then and there. So for that period of time, you'll be out of pocket because you'll buy it and you'll claim it back that day and get paid in a day or two. But if it's a larger purchase, like, again, physiotherapy invoice or personal care, you can claim it as soon as you've got the invoice, and then you can pay after you've got the funds transferred into your bank account. So does that make sense?
yeah, in the thing that it's more like a reimbursement.
Yeah, it is a reimbursement, but I'm not using that word because you don't need to spend it. Sorry, you don't need to pay for it before you get paid back. You just need to have actually had the service, if that makes sense.
The other question I want to ask you is people who are over 65 and they say that, I mean, they are not eligible for the NDIS, so they have to go into an age care package. But for some people with a disability over the age of 65, with the age care package, it's not enough to provide the support they need. Will they be eligible for the NDIS?
It's not really my area, but the answer to that I think would be no. So the NDIS talks about no overlap, so no duplication. So they won't pay for services that should be the responsibility of another government department or a universal obligation. So, you know, they're not going to pay for a taxi company to buy their taxis, you know, and they're not going to pay for trams to be accessible, and they're not going to pay for aged care for those not eligible for the NDIS. So unfortunately, if your aged care package is inadequate for you as a person with disability, your port of call would be, you know, getting that looked at again, or, you know, ringing up the media or going getting an advocate. But the NDIS could legitimately say, you're not eligible, so we don't have to have anything to do with you. And that's a way of stopping other services from withdrawing, from delivering service, saying, oh, we don't have to worry about that anymore. The NDIS will pay for that. So the NDIS is really firm around what it will fund and what should be the responsibility of other parties, and that's in the actual NDIS Act, so the NDIS law. But at the same time, aged care right now is going through similar reforms anyway, which is not my area, but they're going through reforms as well right now. Yep.
Do I have any other questions?
Just a clarification. So if you're self-managing or you've got the NDIA managing, you use the portal. Does the portal have any role if you're using the management service like Mora, or does the portal not have a role in it?
Yes, so you can use the NDIS portal, the MyPlace portal, no matter which method you use. So if you're self-managing, that's the only way you can actually claim reimbursement. But no matter which method you use, you can log into the portal at any time to check what's been happening in your plan. So you can check, you know, what payments have been made. You can check who's claimed money from your plan. You can remove a service booking. So if you decide that your provider's no good, you can stop them from being able to access money from your plan. So it doesn't matter which method you use, you can still access information about your plan in the portal.
We've got time for one last question. Any other questions?
Hi, I'm Zaina from the Migrant Resource Centre.
Hi.
Hi. My question is just, you mentioned the management plan provider and support coordination. So if you can just clarify for me that.
Yeah, okay. So when people are going through the planning process, so they've already been eligible for the NDIS, and they're working out what supports they need in their plan, so what, you know, what amount of money, what their goals are, that type of thing, if they identify that they need assistance with actually finding providers, working out what will work well for them, what won't work well for them, if they need assistance with this, then the person at the agency or the local area coordinator should say you have a need for support coordination, and that will be funded in their plan. Some people might get, you know, 10 hours a year. Some people might get 10 hours a week. But that's where you have, I hesitate to say a case manager, but lots of case managers are now doing the support coordination role. But their role is to actually implement someone's plan. So that's if you can't do it yourself. Whereas a plan management provider, their primary role is just paying the bills. They might be able to do the occasional phone call or occasional email, but their main role is mainly paying the bills, whereas a support coordinator can't pay any bills. They're actually, you know, they are there to actually help implement the person's plan. And most support coordinators as well, you know, their expectation is that they do themselves out of a job. You know, they should build people's skills while they do this. So eventually either the person needs less support coordination year on year, or eventually just don't need any at all. So they're similar, plan management provider and support coordinators, but they are different. Support coordinators are normally a lot more involved in the dealing with complaints or setting up providers, whereas plan management providers just do the paying of bills and the generating of statements and that type of thing. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carl. I'm sure you'll join me in thanking Carl for your information and knowledge sharing today. Thank you.